Good morning to everyone. As we've already heard, the economic and financial developments in Europe are having a profound effect on the global economy. And one of the ways that they're doing this is creating uncertainty about the future. And this uncertainty is causing businesses and households in many countries of the world to delay, or in some cases, cancel their spending plans. Unfortunately, the reality is that this uncertainty is unlikely to be resolved anytime soon. Resolving it probably requires further credible political commitments to some sort of centralised fiscal arrangements in Europe. I think if this were to occur, then it would open up a number of other options for resolving the problems in Europe. The developments in Europe are also having a profound effect on the global financial system. In a number of respects, the changes that are taking place are unprecedented, and the jury is still well and truly out as their ultimate effect. In the 10 minutes that I have this morning, I want to show you 10 charts that really focus on the financial side. The first five charts highlight the unusual nature of recent global financial developments, and the next five, I think, hint at some of the implications for our part of the world. So this first chart shows the size of central bank balance sheets relative to GDP. We've seen very large expansions by the Federal Reserve, by the ECB, the Bank of Japan, and the Bank of England, in the order of 10 to 20% of GDP over the last 4 or 5 years. We really haven't seen this type of simultaneous expansion of central bank balance sheets ever before. By and large, banks have been content to hold extra balances at the central bank. They have relatively little appetite for other assets, and as the Japanese have discovered over many years now, this lack of appetite is thwarting the transmission of this monetary expansion to the rest of the economy. The second chart shows 10-year government bond yields in the US, Germany, and Japan. The point here is that they're all very low. The US, 1.5%, Germany, 1.3%, Japan, 0.8%. These rates are all below the central bank's medium-term inflation objectives. And at the short end, in some European countries at the moment, interest rates are actually negative. That is, investors are prepared to pay governments to look after their money. Very unusual, and I suggest it's not sustainable. The third chart shows the new issuance of AAA securities globally by both the public and the private sectors. The main point here is that issuance has fallen dramatically. And with the downgrades that have occurred, there's been a marked fall in the stock of AAA securities on issue relative to global GDP. At the same time that this reduction in supply has occurred, investors have become more risk-averse, and demand for highly rated securities has increased considerably. As I said a moment ago, some of this demand is being satisfied by an increase in the balances held at the central banks. This fourth chart speaks to the loss of trust in European banks. Shows the ratio of the market value of bank equity to their book value. And the point here is that the ratio is noticeably below 1 in Europe. And again, that's quite unusual. There are two possible reasons for this. One is that investors simply don't believe that the assets held on European banks are valued correctly. And the second is that investors see these banks as so risky that they require very significant compensation for holding that risk. Either way, it's not a healthy state of affairs, and again, I suggest it's not sustainable. It's worth pointing out that things are quite different in Australia and in Asia. These ratios have come down, but they're still well above 1. And this fifth chart shows private sector credit growth in various parts of the world. In the US, the Euro area, Japan, credit growth is basically 0 and has been for some time. The same is true in the United Kingdom. In many countries, this comes after more than a decade of very strong credit growth, often in double digits. In contrast, the experience in these countries, credit growth in East Asia remains quite strong at around 15%. So in summary, we're seeing very large expansion of central bank balance sheets around the world, and I suspect we'll see more. We're seeing extraordinarily low interest rates in the major economies, in some cases negative. We're seeing reduced supply of very high-quality assets at the very time there's increased demand. We We've seen a loss of trust in banks in Europe, as well as in some other parts of the world. And I think we're in for an extended period of little credit growth. It's a very different world to the one we faced just a few years ago. So I want to turn to some of the implications of all this for our part of the world. And as I said, I have five graphs here as well. The first one shows the dollar value of net capital flows to non-Japan Asia. And there are 2 points here. One is these flows are quite volatile, and the second is that over the past couple of years, they're quite high. The fact that they've been high isn't really surprising, as the expected return on real assets in Asia is substantially higher than the expected return on new real assets in the advanced economies. But many Asian central banks worry that these flows have been driven by the monetary expansion in the advanced economies, and there's probably an element of truth to that concern. The deeper issue is that these flows could reverse suddenly, and that could cause macro and financial instability in the region. Dealing with this risk has been a major focus of central banks in the region, and I suspect it's going to continue to be so. This next chart shows the yield on 10-year government bonds in Australia. Currently, they're around 2.9%. This compares with the midpoint of our inflation objective of 2.5%. So we've got very low real yields and the lowest nominal yields for government debt on record. That this is occurring in the middle of a once-in-a-century investment boom is perhaps a little surprising, but it does reflect the dominant impact of global developments on the Australian market. We're one of the few countries with the sovereign having a AAA credit rating, and overseas investors are finding the government bonds very attractive. Nearly 80% of the stock of government of Commonwealth government securities are now held by foreigners. In a sense, these low yields are very good news for us. Foreigners are prepared to lend money to Australia at very low interest rates. The challenge, as always, is to use this money wisely. But I think from a broader perspective, the extended period of very low interest rates for the globe is problematic, and it's going to cause significant problems for many institutions around the world, including pension funds and insurance companies. It's also corrosive to the efficient functioning of many parts of the financial system, and I suspect it's going to have very long-lasting effects. This next chart shows the share of business credit in Australia provided by foreign banks from various regions. You can see that the share accounted for by the European banks has halved over recent years. I think, as both Paul and Malcolm said in the previous session, the problems that the banks, European banks are having at home are having an impact here. But interesting, as you can see, as the Europeans have stepped back, banks from Asia have stepped forward. And of course, the domestic banks have also helped fill some of the gaps here. This next chart shows the converse of the previous one, the share of Australian banks' assets that are held in Asia. And the trend here is pretty clear, and I'd expect this to continue. Quite understandably, the Australian banks are now less interested in Europe, and they're much more interested in Asia, as we heard again in the previous session. This final graph shows the level of lending rates and bank funding costs in Australia relative to the cash rate. The main point here is that both these lines have risen. As I said in a talk yesterday, developments in the global financial system are causing the whole structure of interest rates in Australia to increase relative to the cash rate. This is partly because of the loss of trust in banks globally, which has caused their funding costs to rise, and it's also partly because of the strong competition for deposits in the domestic market. The RBA has responded to these developments by setting a lower cash rate than would otherwise have been the case. It's difficult to be too precise, but the cash rate is around 1.5 percentage points lower than it otherwise would have been. So to summarise, our region is clearly feeling the effects of the financial problems in Europe and in the US. We're seeing strong capital flows to the region, and these are creating a new source of vulnerability. We're seeing very, very low long-term interest rates, which I expect will turn out to be problematic. We've seen the European banks cut back, but the Asian banks are stepping forward. And we've seen all banks around the world have to pay more for funds, and central banks, including our own, have had to respond to that. With all this going on, the banking systems of the region, I think, are coping quite well. but they all have a strong interest in the Europeans solving their problems, and let us all hope that they can do this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Philip. We've got 2 or 3 minutes for a brief Q&A, and I just wanted to pick up on a couple of points that you mentioned there. One is the sort of concerns about private capital flows coming into the region, and I suppose my question there would be around the Australian dollar, the upward pressure that potentially creates, or that does create, on the Australian dollar. What concerns do you have around that, particularly given that the Australian dollar is now perceived, I think, as a safe haven currency in some respects? What concerns do you have around that?
Well, the Australian dollar, as you know, is very high. The primary reason for that is obviously the high terms of trade. We've just come off a period where the terms of trade have been the highest in 150 years. And when you have a very high terms of trade and a once-in-a-century investment boom, you're going to have a very high exchange rate. And that's been an important stabilising influence for the economy. I think the inflow of foreign capital into the bond market has, at the margin, pushed up the currency a bit. But at least where the currency is at the moment, I think it's hard to make at least a strong case that it's fundamentally overvalued. But if these flows of capital continue to come in for purely financial reasons, we could face the issue where the currency is high for purely financial reasons and not because of the fundamentals of the underlying economy.
That brings me to the other point that you raised, and which was raised by Malcolm Turnbull in the previous session, as a question which is quite clearly on the minds of most people here, and that is sitting around wholesale funding and what the withdrawal of European funds to some degree, the problems that that's causing in the Australian banking sector. What are your views in and around that? You mentioned
I don't think at the moment it's causing material problems. I mean, the Australian banks are at the moment not net borrowers from overseas. They have maturing bonds and they're typically replacing those in the overseas market. They're funding the limited credit growth that's occurring largely from domestic deposit growth. So I think that's a much better balance than we've had in the past, and it's not causing particular concerns. The issue is the higher cost of funds, both from the capital markets and because there's very strong deposit competition in the domestic market. You can now get easily 2% above the cash rate on an at-call deposit. 5 years ago, you might got 2% below the cash rate. So this rise in deposit rates is causing the whole structure of interest rates to rise. As I said, we've had to respond to that. But access to finance, I don't think, is a major constraint.
We are certainly seeing sluggishness in the banking sector at the moment, particularly given the drop in mortgage lending, given that some of the big infrastructure projects, some of the big resource projects have perhaps not all been funded out of bank lending here in Australia, but been funded out of other sources, particularly cash sources from those projects themselves. What are we in for a period of quite sluggish growth in the banking?
Well,
sector?
Sluggish is a relative term. I mean, perhaps what we had for a decade and a half is unusually strong credit growth, and I suspect that many parts of the economy, including the finance sector, mistook that for the permanent state of affairs, and now we've returned to something that is more normal, that is more sustainable. And people now interpret that as sluggish because it's slower than what came before, but what came before was not really normal or sustainable. And I think where we are now with household credit growing broadly in line with household incomes and some pickup in business credit, it's a more sustainable position than we have been in. And many parts of our economy, and not just the finance sector, are having to adjust to this change in the financial size of the economy and the growth in the financial sector. It's affecting the real estate sector. I think it's affecting the retail sector as well. But we had really 15 years of very unusual financial and economic activity associated with the decline in interest rates and financial liberalisation, and that adjustment to that is over. And that's causing significant ripple effects right through the economy. And the slower credit growth, what you described as sluggish, I might describe that as a new normal, is one of those.
Well, let me just pick on my last question on that, I suppose, structural adjustment that the Australian economy is going through. And the RBA obviously held its key interest rate at the early July meeting, and you know, that was a reflection, I think, of the balancing of Eurozone issues versus domestic issues and sense that inflation was not getting, certainly was only moderate here. But there is, of course, a community in Australia, the business community, local business community, retail, housing, construction, so on and so forth, that is concerned about interest rates, would like to see lower interest rates to stimulate the economy. Now, it's not a question about interest rates. I know you're not able to answer that. But it's more a question about, I suppose, the role, whether there is a role. Does monetary policy have a role in sort of ameliorating the effects of some of the structural adjustments that are going on in the Australian economy at this point?
Well, I think our role here is to make sure that we have overall macro stability and to make sure that inflation remains under control. In the end of the day, monetary policy cannot do very much about structural adjustment issues, which are very difficult for many businesses and many people. But allowing inflation to be either too high or too low is going to make this problem of structural adjustment worse. What we can do is provide some macro stability, confidence that inflation is going to be within the target range over time. That's the best thing we can do to help the adjustment process. There's allowing inflation to get too high or too low is just going to make the adjustment more difficult.
Philip Lowe, Deputy Governor of Reserve Bank of Australia, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.